May it please the Court. Emmett Greener for Mr. Brash. The concern I have with the state's argument in this case is that they're pursuing a course that's moving away from the authority that was granted under the Hendricks decision of the United States Supreme Court. This effort to minimize the requirement of treatment in a sexually violent predator case is moving away from what is a very critical and necessary element of what makes these laws constitutional and legal in the first place. The treatment is part of what separates this from a punitive statute, and it's what makes it civil, and it's what makes it constitutional to begin with. As they move further and further away from that, they're moving closer to punitive statutes, they're moving closer to preventative detention, and they're moving closer to warehousing these men simply to keep them off the street. And I think that's the direction the state's headed in this argument. And I think the one of the things I want to do...
Are you really maintaining, then, that if they wanted to commit this man, they should have committed him as a civil commitment?
That was certainly available to them, and I think in many respects that would have been the appropriate direction to go in this case, in part because one of the things that I think is necessary to keep in mind is that the schizophrenia is a mental illness. It's not his mental abnormality. So it's an impediment to their ability to treat the mental abnormality.
But you don't disagree with the proposition that the mental abnormality and his overt behavior would make him the subject of commitment to something.
Oh, yes. He's certainly a danger to himself and others. And, in fact, if you look at the record, I said that wrong. I'm sure you looked at the record. We filed a petition to civilly commit him under the general statute, civil commitment statutes. That was dismissed by the probate court as simply being irrelevant to the SVP proceedings.
The recommendation of the professionals who reviewed this before the prosecutors reviewed it?
If I'm following that question correctly, Dr. Scott did the sexually violent predator evaluation. He found that he met the qualifications for a sexually violent predator. Now, he acknowledged the schizophrenia exists, that the schizophrenia prevented him from participating in the MOSOP program and was going to be the major impediment for him ever to be able to participate in a meaningful way in sex offender therapy.
Does your argument depend on what drugs happen to be available? And they're saying that, well, whatever treatments and drugs he's been getting in the prison may not be what he gets once he's committed as a sexually violent predator, and there may be more effective therapies, and its constitutionality can't depend on what your attack is really on improper medical treatment as opposed to the statute.
Okay. That's not the basis of the argument we're making here. We're not challenging the medical protocol at this point. What medications are available, what he's being given at the time, is important to the question of whether this is a constitutional commitment in the first instance. And I think that's the problem as well with part of the state's argument, in looking in terms of this is a challenge to medical treatment, to the protocols being used. This is all looking down the road and in the future. I think it's very important when we're looking at taking away a man's liberty is what are those facts at that very moment, not what can we do, what will be done, what's going to happen in the future. Is this commitment at this time appropriate under the Constitution?
What?
Yes.
I don't want to interrupt that thought. I just wanted you to address, in the making that argument, the significance of their response that he is directing the treatment that he's receiving at the present time.
Okay. And that's not what we're doing in this challenge or with this request to dismiss this as unconstitutional. What we're saying is look at a fixed period of time, which also comes out of a lot of these SVP cases, talking about how dangerous he's going to be 10 years down the road, 5 years down the road. The cases say you look at the time of the commitment at the time of the trial. And that's what we're doing in this case. At the time of the trial, we know what medications he was on. They weren't working.
And you're arguing because they weren't working, he doesn't qualify to be a sexually violent predator.
Not exactly. This is not the Whitfield situation. This is not a situation where he's untreatable. We're very much arguing that treatment is available. He is treatable. All Dr. Scott said is he's the best he can be. I think that has to be qualified with, given the current medications we're willing to give him.
Which are the medications he wants to take, is that right?
You know, the record's not very clear on that. I mean, Dr. Scott said he's medically compliant. He's apparently, you know, doing what they're asking him to do. There's no real information that he's making these choices. While they're considering him competent, I don't always know what medications are out there, what, you know, my doctor's going to give me.
Why is this unconstitutional, then? Why is it unconstitutional looking at now, you're saying?
Looking at now.
Because he can't get better with this regimen.
No,
right?
Looking at now, it's unconstitutional because, one, he is treatable. There's no evidence that he's not. But the state is not making available to him the treatment that is necessary to resolve the schizophrenia that will enable him to participate in sex offender therapy. Whitfield.
What would have to happen for that to happen?
I'm sorry?
What would the state have to do to make that happen?
I think to make that happen, what they would have had to have done is to try some of these medications. And you look at the record, I believe it was in Dr. Logan's testimony, he said that DMH, and I'm taking that to mean he's referring to what was being done in the 2.5 years he was at the treatment center being held pending trial. Because
in
he said
the SVP treatment center.
Right, because he said DMH, not DOC. He said they tried one of the newer psychotropic medications, but it made his condition worse, so they stopped using it. So, I mean, in some respect, they have this understanding that they really need to be treating this guy's schizophrenia.
So it does sound like to me you're just saying they're giving him the wrong medicine, and how can that make it unconstitutional?
It makes it unconstitutional in that it distinguishes this from Hendricks and distinguishes this from Whitfield in that he is not an untreatable person who can simply be put there because he is mentally ill and dangerous.
But if he's now dangerous and meets the requirements of the statute, I mean, isn't your argument to mandamus them to give him treatment if you've got experts who say that he's entitled to and needs different treatments?
I think the real problem with that is kicking this can down the road. I have a real problem with being able to say, well, let's commit him now, and we'll figure out later if there's something we can do for him.
Well, but, I mean, what happens if they try some of these experimental things and the guy dies, like some of them, you know, cause death? I mean, at that point in time, where are we? I mean, as long as they're making your concern is, well, they can act like they're making a legitimate effort. The guy never gets the treatment. He never gets out. I understand the concern, but, you know, the treatment could be worse. The treatment could kill him.
Right. And that's...
And who gets to make that decision?
He does. Well, and see, that's what we don't know at this time. Dr. Scott says he does not even know if Mr. Brash has been offered the Clozaril. They know it's something that's available. Dr. Scott doesn't even know if they've made it available to him. It's a miracle drug, Dr. Scott said. This may kill him, Mr. Brash told Dr. Logan that he has thought about suicide as the only way to stop these voices.
Well, again, how's it a constitutional issue?
It's a constitutional issue in that the purpose, this comes from Judge Wolf's concurrence in Norton, the idea is that he's sick, dangerous, must be locked up and treated, and when he gets well, he can be released. Hendricks said that... the state has a statutory obligation to provide care and treatment designed to affect recovery. I think these things have to be measured and qualified at the time of the commitment. They've had 2.5 years to deal with the situation that they knew coming out of DOC was not going to make make sexual offender treatment available to him. He could not complete this. They knew it going into it.
Is there sexual offender treatment available and imposed or offered at the facility where he's currently residing, the SVP facility?
I'm sorry, is it or has it been?
It's available there.
It is available there.
But they first have to get the schizophrenia under control in order for him to be able to participate in it.
Yes, and that's why the argument that I'm making some speculative argument about whether he can or can't be treated.
I mean, if you had him committed to a regular civil commitment, I suppose for one thing he he wouldn't have the sexually violent predator label, and therefore he would be much more amenable to being released when he was getting better.
But yes and no.
But it's also a DMH facility, so is the treatment the same?
I can't say that the treatment is the same. I don't know.
I assume they have sexually predatory people in mental health facilities that are not the SVP center.
I would suspect that's true. But I think maybe the focus is different. I think Dr. Logan kind of suggested that in a not the sexual offender facility, in a department of mental health facility, the treatment may be more aggressive. They don't have to concern themselves with trying to, you know, worrying about the sex offender program or any of that. They can treat the schizophrenia and the delusions much more aggressively. Now, to kind of deal a little bit with what you were saying about making it easier for him to get out once they resolve the schizophrenia as not being a sexually violent predator, if he's committed to the Department of Mental Health, that's an agency with jurisdiction under the SVP law. If they still believe he's a sexually violent predator, they can proceed with that action directly from DMH. They've done it a couple of times.
So you filed the motion for a regular civil commitment as opposed to the SVP commitment because you believe he needed help and that he was not an SVP?
Yes. And part of that is because the SVP commitment is unique. It's directed not at a mental illness. It's directed at a mental abnormality. And because of the mental illness that they're not resolving, they know they're not going to be able to resolve with the drugs that they're treating him with, he's not subject to that special commitment as a sexually violent predator.
Did the experts think that he had both the mental abnormality, thank you, and the mental illness both?
Dr. Scott, who testified on behalf of the state, said he believed he had antisocial personality disorder, and he identified that as the mental abnormality. Dr. Logan, if I recall correctly, disagreed with the antisocial personality diagnosis.
In terms of the treatment, has there been any attempt to, on your part, to require the kind of treatment you're talking about here today?
No, because we don't, other than asking for him to be committed to a facility where we think he would be appropriately treated. Like, under these circumstances, this is a unique commitment under the probate code, and we're challenging that commitment.
What I'm getting to is you're saying the commitment is wrong because the treatment is not right.
Right.
Has there been any attempt to provide the right treatment or, on your part, to require the right treatment be provided within the commitment?
In terms of pursuing a mandamus or some sort of a proceeding like that? No, Your Honor, there's not.
Is it your burden under Hendricks to prove that the treatment he is receiving is not genuine and is merely a sham or pretext of treatment?
I don't believe it is. I think in the sense of like an affirmative defense or something, I think the burden, it remains on the state to show that they're, you know, following the constitutional requirements of providing the opportunity for him to get out. However, if it is our burden, I believe we've met that with the testimony we put on through Dr. Logan, as well as a cross-examination of Dr. Scott, who admits these drugs are available.
Well, regardless of which facility he's in, he is suffering.
He is.
And they have an obligation to treat him, whether he is civilly committed or whether he is in a SVP treatment facility.
Yes, I agree with
because
that.
Because they have to alleviate the suffering first. I mean, the other question is, well, what is the goal after you relieve the suffering? But right now, the point is you have to relieve his suffering.
Right. And actually, think that brings up a really interesting point. They have testified and argued in the brief that the medication they have him on now is calm. He likes it. It keeps him calm. They've made him comfortable. But they're not doing what they need to do to get him into sex offender therapy so he can regain his liberty. Now, if he was in a general civil commitment facility, if that's working to control his symptomology so that he can work out in society, then he does get out. The problem here is by simply keeping him calm but not getting him into sex offender therapy, they're not meeting the obligation under the sexually violent predator commitment.
So what you're saying is that in a regular civil commitment, the therapy that he's getting now, which keeps him calm and abates the effects of his demons.
Yes.
Is that he will be eligible for release.
He might
well
be.
But induced state of being calm.
Right.
Not a calm, but active schizophrenia.
Right, if he's no longer dangerous to himself or right. others as a result of the schizophrenia.
But you have not asked for different treatment, and he's not asked for different treatment.
To this point, no. We've not. And no further questions.
May it please the Court. One of the first things that I want to point out is that the two doctors actually had competing beliefs as to what the mental abnormality was. From my understanding, Dr. Logan did find a mental abnormality, and he found that schizophrenia was the mental abnormality that Mr. Brash was suffering from. Dr. Scott found that antisocial personality was the mental abnormality that Mr. Brash was suffering from, with the addition of a mental illness of schizophrenia, but he did not find the schizophrenia
to be. So your position is that either of those, whether it's the antisocial personality disorder, which is kind of a grab bag, or schizophrenia, which is a very specific diagnosis, mm-hmm. either of those would qualify under the statutory definition of mental abnormality?
I don't know about that. I'm just saying that that's what Dr. Logan's opinion was, is that by reading our statute, his expert opinion was that schizophrenia was a mental abnormality under our statute. And so either way, the point is that the schizophrenia is what it, for lack of a better term, it's the shell around the yolk. I mean, if you're going to get to the yolk of the egg, you're going to have to crack the shell. Before we can deal with Mr. Brash's problems involving his sexual offending, we have to first get him into an area where he can be treated for that sex offending.
But as I understand his argument, or part of it, is that he was not allowed to go into the MOSOP program because of his schizophrenia, because he couldn't benefit from it. And the same is going to be true long-term in the treatment program he's in. So in effect, it really cannot be said that the purpose of this is to help him overcome the mental abnormality, because as long as he has schizophrenia, he'll never be able to, and the treatment is not geared towards actually curing his schizophrenia.
Well, certainly that's the argument that he makes, but that's where the state's argument that this is a speculative claim comes in, because while he was unable to be treated during MOSOP because of his schizophrenia, MOSOP is run by the Department of Corrections. Department of Corrections is entirely a different facility from the Department of Mental Health.
He said he's been 2.5 years in Department of Mental Health, though. Is that right? And still has
I believe it's 2.5 years pending the trial. It's probably longer than that at this point.
At DMH? So is that different? Has he received different treatment at DMH than he did in the Department of Corrections?
Well, from what Dr. Scott testified to, he is receiving proper treatment. That's what he testified to at trials, that he was receiving proper treatment and that he has available to him the full range of medical and psychiatric treatment that any patient in the Department of Mental Health gets at this point in time. Unfortunately, the testimony on the record never got into whether he was actually receiving sex offender-specific treatment at that time, whether he would receive it in the future, anything like that. All we know is that they were asked, is he receiving treatment? Dr. Scott said, yes, he is receiving appropriate treatment. And so that's all that the record reflects at this point in time. And the fact that he was unable to receive sex offender-specific treatment while in prison, I don't think is dispositive as to whether or not he will receive it while he is in DMH. Because at DMH, they have very different facilities. They have a different budget. They have different options available to them. Prison, as Dr. Scott testified to, is very limited by its budget. It doesn't have the budget for the newest and most advanced medications and treatment options, whereas DMH does. And so DMH probably is a much better place where he's more suited to actually be able to not only treat his schizophrenia, but eventually his antisocial personality and maybe even his sex offending problems. And so for that reason.
Did the state oppose the civil commitment? They moved to dismiss.
Yes, I believe we did move to dismiss because of procedural irregularities. That wasn't the proper way in which to bring that claim as I believe what Mr. Brash did at trial was that he tried to dismiss the SVP petition in favor of a general civil commitment petition, but that doesn't follow the proper procedure under the statutes for either, and so that's why it was ultimately not considered by the trial court, is my understanding.
What would the difference in treatment be if he was in a regular civil commitment versus the SVP commitment to treat his schizophrenia?
From what I understand from Dr. Scott's testimony, I don't believe that there would be a difference. I believe that in either instance, he's going to get the full range of treatment available to him from the Department of Mental Health, and everything that they have to give to a schizophrenic patient in his situation, they will be doing whatever is in his best interest to try and improve his schizophrenic symptoms. And so I think that the difference is that while he's committed to the DMH facility as an SVP, eventually the goal is to try and treat his sexual offending problems as well. But unfortunately, you know, the schizophrenia is obviously something that is the primary. I mean, in a triage situation, the schizophrenia is the first thing that needs to be treated. And, you know, that I don't know that that precludes him from receiving sex offender specific treatment at this time or not. There's absolutely nothing in the record saying that. We know that it precluded him in prison. But again, prison is a totally different setting than the Department of Mental Health. So I think at this time it's just pure speculation to assume that he's not receiving sex offender treatment or that he never will. So, and another thing is the motion to dismiss that Mr. Brash filed was based on his lack of amenability to treatment. And that's exactly what it said in the motion, is because he's not amenable to treatment at this time. But the decision in Kansas v. Hendricks said that that doesn't matter. We don't care if they're amenable to treatment or not. Obviously, if treatment is a goal of the statute and it's an obligation of the state, then the state better be providing treatment, and the state is providing treatment here. He's never alleged the state does not provide sex offender-specific treatment to SVP committees. And so certainly, you know, if it's truly the case that his schizophrenia is preventing him from receiving sex offender-specific treatment and will forever in the distant future prevent him from receiving sex offender-specific treatment, that doesn't mean that his commitment is unconstitutional, because there are multiple aims of the SVP statute, only one of which is treatment. The other aims are also for care and control, because he is a dangerous individual to himself and to others at this point in time. And in Kansas v. Hendricks, the U.S. Supreme Court said that, you know, we've never held that you can't confine somebody. The Constitution does not prevent a state from civilly detaining those for whom no treatment is available but who nevertheless pose a danger to others. So even the lack of amenability to treatment at this time, if that were true, still would not make this an unconstitutional commitment.
Because part of the consideration is whether treatment is available.
Certainly. And that's what the dissent in Kansas v. Hendricks is very concerned about. They were concerned because under Kansas's scheme, they didn't receive any sex offender treatment at all while in prison, and they only received treatment then after they were committed. And so I believe that the dissent's concern was, well, that sure looks like it's punitive, because it looks like you're imposing double confinement. It's only when you're afraid they're going to get out that you start treating them. And that's not the case in Missouri. Here, we offer the MOSOP program to individuals while they're in prison who are convicted of sex offenses, and it's their option whether to take it or not. In most cases, of course, in Mr. Brash's cases, he wasn't allowed to because his schizophrenia interfered, but certainly we do have the aim of trying to treat them while they're in prison, and it's not a situation where we just, you know, have this sham of, well, we want to house them so that we can treat them, but then never really have the intention to do so.
You have to go through the treatment in order to be eligible for parole.
Certainly you do. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely the case.
He obviously aged out of his sentence. I mean, he came to the top part of his sentence, right?
Yeah, I believe he did complete his criminal sentence. And the Western District already made a decision on this issue in Whitfield, and I think that that's a very well-reasoned decision, obviously not binding on this court, but they relied on Kansas v. Hendricks. They looked at what the purposes of our SVP statute were, and they determined that, you know, it's okay, because in that case, Mr. Whitfield was claiming that his IQ was too low for him to understand the cognitive behavioral therapy that they use in the sex offender program in the treatment. And so he had an expert come in and testify that because his IQ was so low, he would never benefit from it and therefore never get better and never have an option to get out. And the Western District said, well, you know, first of all, they found that was speculative as well, because they didn't know that DMH could not provide him some level of sex offender treatment that would help him despite his low IQ. But the second thing that the Western District found was that essentially doesn't matter. As long as treatment is being offered and attempted, you know, success at treatment is not the ultimate determination as to whether or not something is constitutional. And in Allen v. Illinois, the United States Supreme Court said that the state serves its purpose of treating rather than punishing sexually dangerous persons by committing them to an institution expressly designed to provide psychiatric care and treatment. Here, there's no question, they're all confined to DMH following their commitment, and DMH is obviously designed to provide psychiatric care and treatment to these individuals. And, you know, whatever it is, whatever their underlying mental abnormality is, that's their focus. And so here, he's being treated for his schizophrenia. He's being treated, you know, for antisocial personality disorder, and presumably, if not already, some point for sex offending behavior.
Now, there's no treatment for antisocial personality disorder, is
there? Certainly, I think that they can do some sort of cognitive behavioral. I don't know if it's successful or not, but I believe that doctors would say that they certainly can try. And the other problem that we have with the constitutionality argument is that this is an improper vehicle, the direct appeal from the SVP commitment for a challenge to the constitutionality here, because it's not truly a challenge to the constitutionality, not even as applied to Mr. Brash, because all it is a challenge to the adequacy of his treatment. In fact, his expert, that's exactly what his expert said. He said, I have no problem with, or I agree that he's being treated. I have a problem with the aggressiveness of that treatment. And so, That is the crux of his claim, is that I don't like that I'm not receiving a certain drug, and that's not something that is part of the determination of an SVP commitment. And so for that reason, it's not appropriate at this point in the procedure. If he wanted to challenge the conditions of his confinement at DMH, he needed to bring some other sort of civil action, perhaps in 1983. I'm not really sure what would be the appropriate vehicle, but it's certainly not through the direct appeal from his SVP commitment. It would have to be something where DMH is a party. But other than that, unless this court has any further questions, we'd ask that you affirm. Thank you.
May it please the court. I'll start out with an apology to everyone. I've been trying to find out what Dr. Logan said, whether he identified a mental abnormality. I have no recollection. I'm sure the court can figure that out. In the language of the motion that we filed, when you look at it, legal file pages 102 and 103, while we said he did not have the ability to complete the treatment, it was couched in terms of at the time under the treatment they were given in paragraph 6, about his current medications, more efficacious treatment may be available. MSOTC has the means available to improve his cognitive function. DMH's maintenance of respondent's medication regime without providing respondent with necessary aggressive medication that may restore his ability. It's not that he is not capable or is untreatable. It's that they were not treating him. The language of Whitfield is very important that you look at it. Whitfield's talking about persons for whom no treatment is available, when no acceptable treatment is available, untreatable individuals.
Of course, here you're not talking about when no treatment's available.
That's exactly right.
You're saying there is treatment.
Yes, that's why this is not Whitfield.
Why isn't your proper remedy to seek the treatment that you believe he should be given?
Because the proper remedy is not to deprive him of his liberty under the SVP law when they're not meeting their obligation to provide him an ability to get himself out. Look at the argument that Dr. Scott was saying. He has the full range of treatment for schizophrenia available.
Yeah, but that's treating your main complaint is he's not receiving treatment that might help.
Right.
Not that he isn't an SVP, a person who has that commitment. Why isn't the remedy then, instead of letting him out, give him this treatment?
The remedy in this case, the error in this case that needs to be remedied, is committing him, depriving him of his liberty in a manner that does not comport with Hendricks or comport with Norton, in a situation where they know that giving him the treatment that they're following, the full range of treatment that may be available with what they're doing, with what they've done, it will never give him the opportunity to complete the sex offender therapy. What the state is arguing is the speculation in this case. Let us give him the opportunity to do that and see what happens. That comes after his liberty has been taken away. I'm defending his liberty in the first instance, to make sure they're comporting with Norton, to make sure they're comporting with Hendricks before they lock him up and then try to decide whether or not they can treat him. And that's what the issue is in this case. That's why the constitutional challenge is correct. Hendricks, talking about Allen versus Illinois, Kansas has the statutory obligation to provide care and treatment designed to affect recovery. That's what we're asking for, and that's what I'm trying to defend on behalf of Mr. Brash.
Any further questions? Thank you very much. Case is taken under